Well, we're continuing in our little study about the first crisis that I'm dealing with this summer, and that's the crisis of what I've called the crisis of safety. Last week, we covered a lot of ground basically about what's going on in college campuses and our society today, our culture, with this overprotection, people being offended at the drop of a hat, people being upset over every little thing, and really feeling that they're not being safe anymore. They're not being protected anymore, and really the redefinition of those things. We left off last time with Now, we were talking about these three great untruths, these three untruths that these authors in this book mentioned. The first one is the untruth of fragility, to be fragile, and, you know, you're going to be made weak if somebody says something to you, and just, you know, protect them from every little thing because, you know, young people and college-age students and things are fragile, and you might break them, and that would be just a terrible thing, you know, like Humpty Dumpty, he fell from the wall, and you can't put him back together again. Such a sad and terrible thing. Because someone ate a peanut. That was a little story that we left off with last week about the example there of, you know, going to that school orientation and having hours of talks about nothing but avoiding peanuts and all those things, and then not listening to reason about that. I wanted to talk really quick about a study. This is actually called the hygiene hypothesis. The hygiene hypothesis. We'll get to that in a minute. They actually did a study in February of 2015. Where they tracked a variety of infants, had a large group of infants, and they tracked them. The study came out in 2015. They tracked them from birth to about age five. And they took, I know, again, you're experimenting with kids. I was like, yeah, there's its own moral and ethical dilemmas with that. But anyway, they did some of the kids, they exposed them. And I know some people have legitimate allergies. I'm not at all, you know, they're not attacking that at all. But they said that they did this study, and those that had been protected from peanuts from birth to age five, 17% of them had developed a peanut allergy. But those that had been deliberately exposed to it from birth to five, only 3% developed an allergy. So yes, there is an allergy of 3%. It is a legitimate thing. But to, you know, shield everybody from it, you know, and scared to death that somebody's going to be exposed to peanut dust, and then suddenly they're going to have life-threatening diseases and things. Well, in other words, our immune system, sometimes when it's exposed to things, it can actually build up an immunity to it. But this hygiene hypothesis, thanks to hygiene, antibiotics, and too little outdoor play. We talked about that a lot last week. So, emphasis on hygiene. You know, we live in a pretty clean country. I don't know if y'all, and you may think otherwise. I know there's parts of our country that are not. Sometimes when I go down to New Orleans, no offense to Louisiana people, I feel like when I'm walking on the street, I just need to kind of clean my shoes off before I get back in the car. It's just kind of dirty. Sometimes bigger cities are dirty. I know in parts of San Francisco, they're talking about how it's the people living in the streets and it's kind of slummy and stuff. But for the most part, you know, we've got running water and hot water and antibacterial wipes and bleach and Clorox wipes and hand sanitizers everywhere. And that's good stuff. It's good. It protects us. And it helps us get clean, you know, before we just grab our burger or whatever. But, you know, when I was a kid, we dropped something on the floor and a dog stepped on it. We pick it up and eat it. You know, it's part of life, you know. I know I've traveled out of the country before and a pastor's been to India and Haiti. And I know that we can tell you that here in America, it's a lot cleaner. There's a lot more hygiene in our country. There's nothing wrong with that. But because of hygiene, because of antibiotics, because of, and the authors say, too little outdoor play. You know, we discuss that quite a bit. You know, we got to be careful out there. You know, there might be a piece of pollen and it might get in your nostril and you might have a runny nose. And again, I know there's legitimate things. Pollen gets me bad, you know, and I've grown up with it in North Carolina, been outside, but it still gets to me. But I've actually noticed that now that I work inside instead of working outside, it affects me more. Kind of weird. When I was working with my dad painting and we were outside every day, it really didn't, but I got used to it. Didn't bother me as much. And again, I know there are legitimate allergies. My brother Aaron, he had a grass hay allergy when he was young. And I'm telling you, we'd be out there cutting grass and he would sneeze for probably 5 minutes straight. And I was like, dude, stop. What are you doing? He's like, I can't help it. But you know what he didn't do? He didn't go inside and he kept working. Of course, dad said, I don't care if you're sneezing. Get out there and get that grass cut, boy. You know, push mower that was not self-propelled. Acre of grass. You know, yeah. So I got on my boys one time. Yeah, mine's a self-propelled one. And one time, I think, Seth, you were probably like 8 years old. I don't know, seven. I told him to get out there and cut the grass. And they were holding on to the top of the, him and Jared both trying to push it. You know, but yeah, get out there and do so. Okay, yeah, had to go blow my nose after. But that's okay. They have tissues for that. It will be okay. But anyway, all this, no, don't play outside. We got to stay inside all the time. We got to, you know, it's hot out there in the summer. I was out working outside Friday and I worked outside yesterday and I haven't done that in a while. And I like getting outside and working. I was telling, I think it was Bill, when I was working with my dad, we worked outside in the summer, the sun on your back, 100 degrees, whatever, very hot in North Carolina, just like down here, except the humidity wasn't as high. And it didn't bother me. I got used to it. I mean, we were sweating so bad on those ladders, I used to think it was raining. I would stop and I hear rain, and it was our sweat hitting the ground that fast. You just get hot. Hey, we kept going and kept working. And then I'm working at school for 10, 15 years, get outside, and I'm like a sissy now. You get used to those kind of things, and your body seems to be able to adjust to that. But I know this is a very, controversial topic, and they're not, again, slighting the fact that people do have allergies, and people do have issues and things like that. And there's a need for hygiene, obviously. There's a need for antibiotics. There's a need for those things. We need that. We're glad that we have that. We can stay clean and protect from things like that. But there's also a downside. If there's an overemphasis, it seems that there are some problems as well. So it may lead to developed immune systems that overreact to substances that aren't actually threatening, and it can cause allergies. So it continues on with this little statement here that we left off with. By shielding children from every possible risk, we may lead them to react with exaggerated fear to situations that aren't risky at all and isolate them from the adult skills that will one day have to matter. In other words, what doesn't kill you makes you weaker. Teaching kids, now listen, teaching kids that failures, insulted me. Painful experience, teaching them that those things will do lasting damage is harmful in and of itself. Without stressors, without mental challenges, we deteriorate. Sit around and do nothing for 8 years, 10 years. Sit on the couch and watch TV and eat potato chips, a couch potato kind of example. Do that for 8 to 10 years, your brain will be slosh. After finishing my dissertation, I felt like my brain was all used up. It was just bleh. But I've had to keep reading. Find books and read. Or do things that challenge you mentally. But if we just kind of sit back, someone insulted me. That is doing lasting damage to me. Just teaching them that is harmful. That's the problem. I remember talking to Mrs. Peppert about it. I remember looking back in the past 10 years, the change in the bully. Oh, Miss Pepper's not here. The change in the bullying type of situation, we've redefined it. We're going to talk about that in a minute. We've redefined it. I remember when I was a boy, we watched Andy Griffith. I love Andy Griffith. I've watched every single episode of the Black and Whites, owned the DVDs. I know there's some things in there, situation ethics and things like that. But I enjoyed watching Andy Griffith when I was a kid growing up. And I remember the one where Opie was getting beat up by the bully and to take his lunch money. He would just cower and give his lunch money. Now, that's a real bully. Boy, you give me your lunch money, I'm going to knock your socks off. I want your milk. Okay, yeah, he's a bully. And then remember what Opie did? He stood there and said no, and the boy hit him across the face and gave him a black eye, and Opie tore into him and whooped him. And he came running into that courthouse, grinning ear to ear with his black eye. Ain't it a beaut, Paul? Look at this. He was proud of that shiner that he had there, that black eye. Now, that's a bully. Not somebody, hurt my feelings. Get over it. That's not bullying. We're going to talk about this concept creep. We've allowed definitions of concepts to creep downward and to change. And it's happened in a variety of things. We're going to get to that here in just a minute. Let's continue on, because I'll get dragged down and we won't finish. Let's talk about anti-fragility. This man, Nassim Taleb, introduced this in 2007. He wrote a book called Anti-Fragile and another book called The Black Swan. And he said there are three kinds of people, really. There are fragile, or things, if you want to call them things or people. He was dealing with things, but he said you could also refer it to people. There are fragile things that break easily, okay? They break easily, they can't heal themselves. There are resilient things that can handle shock, that can withstand shock, that can be resilient through things. But he said there's also the anti-fragile. And that means things that are weak and inefficient because they are unchallenged. We need challenges. I know we use it as a cliche. We get in there and build character. Yeah, that's right. It's true. It's true. And boy, get out there with those scissors and chop that grass. But Dad, I have a riding lawnmower. I don't care. We're going to build some character. Well, yeah, okay. No, get out there and do it. It's hard to, I hate fence lines. My fence line is like a nightmare. And last year my boys did about half of it in the heat of the summer. And that was hard. Them vines and prickles all over, and it's painful. And guess what? It comes right back. And you got to get out there and do it again. What is that? It's a challenge. It's a stress. But instead of what doesn't kill you makes you weaker, it makes you stronger. It makes you stronger. It makes you, you know, even challenges in character that we have in our life today, it makes us learn how to go through things, how to do things. So, how to deal with, for example, the unexpected. How to deal with the unexpected. Oh, I'm anti-fragile. I'm just going to fall to pieces. I can't handle this. And again, the three types of things, the fragile, the resilient, or the anti-fragile, where I'm unchallenged, and so therefore I become ready to be fragile at any moment. At the drop of a hat, something might happen and I may break down into little pieces. And so this has arisen, Talib said, because of overprotection. Overprotection. You know, we try to clear away anything. Now listen, that might upset the child. Clear away anything that'll upset the kid. And by that, we're creating a generation that cannot cope with anything. Can't cope with events. Can't cope with a challenge. We've created this type of generation. Again, this phrase, I know it may seem somewhat psychological, but there's a lot of validity here. We want to prepare the child for the road. And I mean, this isn't a biblical statement, but there's probably some kind of principle there. We want to prepare our children to one day be adults, right? They're going to be out there on their own, having to make decisions. And I was talking to Zachary. I said, asked him how he enjoyed it. It's kind of neat being married and driving home from work and going to your own house. I remember that when Megan and I got married. He's like, man, I'm going home. I'm not going back to mom's to get dinner. I'm going home. This is pretty cool. You know, you're an adult now. You're on the road yourself. You've been hopefully prepared for that. But what have we tried to do today? We've tried to prepare the road for the child. I'm going to get rid of every obstacle. I'm going to get rid of every challenge. I don't want my poor baby to at least to even stumble. You know what? Let him get out there and muff it up. For example, I remember the first time I bought a car. It was I was just graduated high school. My dad let me go to England for a senior trip. We got home and we found this beautiful 1993 Ranger. It's a good one, John. Rangers for life, I tell you. Anyway, it was a splash. It had the sport rims, Chris. Nice, chrome, beautiful, of course, Brenda. And I said, man, I like that truck. It was a salvage truck, which means it had been in a small wreck, and the guys had fixed it up, the body shop had fixed it, so I got a really good deal on it. My dad went to the bank with me and helped me a little bit with that. He said, son, here's what you do. And then when it came time for me to trade that one in later, a few years later, dad didn't help me. I said, well, have fun. Buddy, I got kind of cleaned on that one. I learned all about what interest rates mean. I learned all about 3 years for you. How long are you going to pay this thing? And so let's just say the sweet little Blue Ranger that's still running, I had a little time paying that one off. That was fun. Thankfully, the Lord spared me and somebody ran a red light. I hit them and the insurance paid my truck off. I bought it back for $400 and kept driving it. So there we go. But my dad said, oh, see you later, bud. I had to learn the hard way. And buddy, I got a little cleaned on that. But now, you know, Megan remembers when I went and bought her little blue car several years ago after we got married. Well, that dealer was about to kick me out. Or it was that Explorer that we bought. He was so sick of me. And he said, I finally got down the price I want. It was close. And I said, well, I'm leaving. You're not where I want to be. The owner ran out the door after me, begging me. Well, we'll do it. We'll do it. And this is after 2 hours of me being firm. And I said, okay, fine. We'll do it. But it needs new tires. But I got them. Hey, you know, got the tires. Got the price I wanted. I learned. How did I learn? By going through it the hard way. Going through it the hard way. My dad always tells me the story of his dad. Took him in a boat, took him out in the middle of the lake, said, swim, boy. He said, that's how I learned to swim. That's how I learned to swim. Now, me, I'd have been down there gurgling, drowning, it would have been all over. Now, I'm sure Granddad was right there ready if something happened to help him up. But he said, I learned how to float real quick. Because I didn't like the feeling about drowning. 15 floaties, man. A whole out. We're just, you know, and I know safety and we've got lifeguards. I'm not knocking that at all. But you know what? There's something to that. Prepare the child for the road. What are we teaching at home? Spiritually, it's going to prepare them for the road. Instead of clearing out all, now it's going to be a cakewalk for you out there, son. Yeah, it's a million times when the moonlight and roses turns to daylight and dishes. That's what I tell the kids in life management. That happens. Life's here, buddy. Wake up. Now you got three or four kids running around and you're ready to just go off a cliff somewhere. It happens. Life. It's hard. It's hard. But we've taught that it's supposed to be easy. And if anything stands in the way of the easy, oh, you bigot. That offended me. Because I'm supposed to be safe. I'm supposed to be protected from anything difficult. And now my mental capacities cannot handle this. Prepare the child for the road. That's what we try to do here at our school. We try to prepare them spiritually for the road. That's our number one priority. Prepare them to go into life and follow God's Word. To come to Christ in school. To grow in Christ during school. And to go out into life and be a testimony for Christ. That's our goal, to prepare them. We want to prepare them academically. We want to prepare them practically in any way we can. But we don't do that by clearing away, you know, and again, it's a whole new generation. And what's even going to be sadder, I'm afraid, is when this current I generation becomes parents. That's going to be a lot of fun. We want every obstacle cleared. You gave my child a D! Your child earned a D! I love this one. Mrs. Brainerd does too back there. We're going to be lazy academically all semester long. And we come down to the end. What do I need, Mrs. Brainerd? Can I have extra credit? School stops tomorrow and I really need it. Sorry. Where were you the past 3 months? Where were you? That's a hard lesson to learn, isn't it? But it needs to be taught. It's a challenge. They'll think, maybe next time I won't do it that way. And that's the way it is in a lot of things. Of course, you can give practical helps, but you can learn a lot of things on your own. When you chastise, when you reprove, when you rebuke, learn how to deal with that. And it's really hard because of one thing, the word pride. It's hard to be reproved. It's hard for all of us in this room, me included especially. And then you have, you know, I want to get upset. And then I just start thinking, the Holy Spirit starts kicking me in the face a little bit. I'm like, yep, I was open mouth, insert foot one more time in my life. And I was wrong, so I need to go apologize. Ever happened to you? And what does that do? It grows that muscle. But you got to teach your kids that. Well, that doctrine was too hard. What the message preached was too hard. What the teacher confronted me about was too hard. What my friend confronted me about was too difficult. Now they're a bigot because they confronted me and I don't feel safe. And so I want to surround myself with everybody that's going to just comfort me and make me feel good about myself again and go back to the whole self-esteem movement. But it's a biblical principle. And we talked about that last week as well in the book of Hebrews about having your senses exercised. That's the idea of a muscle again. Exercise them. And what does it take, as we said last week, to build muscles? It takes a lot of hard work. Every day or every other day or whatever, in the gym or lifting trees. Isaac doesn't go to the gym. He just lifts up big old tree trunks. That's his workout. And he's building muscles because he's working. And it's hard. It's hard. And we learn things as well by, you know, again, we can get advice on things. Again, I'll go back to the painting. My dad's taught me a lot about painting. Other friends of mine did. But there's some things I learned on my own by messing it up. You know, take a metal door, okay? A lot of fun. I was priming one for Charlie Smith. And I waited till the sun was on one part where I could open the door away from the sun and paint it. Because if you paint a metal door in the sun, yeah, as soon as you put the brush on, it dries. And then you got this big globby mess. You know how I learned that? Because somehow, somewhere in North Carolina has got a door that's globbed up. That's how I learned that one. So, and you learn things the hard way sometimes. And my problem is now that I know that I'm always kind of watching it. Oh, don't do it that way. Well, what if I should maybe sometimes let somebody go ahead and mess it up. Because you know what? You'll remember it better that way. You'll remember it. We got to move on. So we've cleared the way of anything that might upset our kids. So we've created a generation that cannot cope. Cannot cope. And this is where we're heading. So let's finish up this untruth of fragility with talking about safetyism. And here's where we want to talk about concept creep. I know it sounds kind of like a weird term, but concept creep was introduced in 2016 by a man named Nick Haslam. He did a research study and he was bemoaning the fact that we have allowed the definition of certain terms to creep downward or to be wider and broader in its inclusivity of what it means. And so we can label people with a variety of things that really they aren't. We label somebody as a bully when they're not really a bully. For example, concept creep redefines different ideas such as abuse, physical abuse, okay? Obviously, it's wrong. A husband should go in there and beat his wife to a pulp. No, it's abuse, or to a kid. But if we redefine that to mean, my husband yelled at me, I'm calling the cops, he's going to jail for domestic violence. It's coming. You think I'm crazy? It's coming. Why? Because we've redefined it. That abuse wasn't physical, but it hurt me. And we've related a subjective definition to bullying. We've talked about that. Long gone. I wish we had the bullies that would come in here and beat the snot out of you, take your lunch money, and move on. Is it wrong? Yeah, it's wrong. But I am sick and tired of us defining bullying as someone disagreed with me. Welcome to life. We need to learn to be able to logically argue with through disbeliefs, and if we have to agree to disagree, fine, but we do it in civility. Not, oh, I got hurt, and now I'm going to hate you. And we're going to look in a minute at, they've defined, since I've been emotionally hurt, I therefore am justified to be violent. And so violence isn't even as bad as words anymore. We're going to get to this. Trauma, prejudice, and even the word safety, which is what we're talking about, safetyism. The creep indicates that the concepts are now applied to less severe situations as well as those things only related by concept. It's conceptually going to hurt me, so therefore, it's in the same category as abuse, for example. Safety, therefore, is not really physical protection anymore. Isn't that what safety used to be defined as? Is it? Safety, you want physical protection. You know, we live in a society where we've got police officers and law enforcement and things, and no one should be allowed to walk up in the street and just beat the snot out of you. Or I remember a few years ago, they had this blackout thing they were doing where people were just walking down the streets and people were running up behind them, just banging them right in the back of the head. Y'all remember that? And people were just falling out, and then they're laughing about it and videoing it. Should have arrested every one of them. And put it, it was a funny joke. That's physical violence. We have laws against that. That's what safety is. But no longer is it physical protection, but now it's mental and emotional. Emotional protection. Don't offend anybody else's ideology. Ideology. The book I was reading here gives the idea or the example of trauma. I'm going to read just a few things here for you. The word trauma, in the early versions of the Manual of Psychology, it was used to describe a physical agent causing brain damage, okay? Then in the 80s, because of some other things, they did the post-traumatic stress disorder as a mental disorder. It was the first type of traumatic injury that isn't physical. So they redefined that in the 80s. And of course, there, you know, it was used for people that had a terrible experience, you know, maybe a terrible war experience, maybe gone through a terrible event like a rape or something. Yes, there's trauma related to that. There is. There's no question about it. There's trauma. I remember some of these men that made it through World War II. One of my best friends, his granddad was in a foxhole in Normandy for, I don't know how long, I can't remember if it was a day or two or however long it was, but he was in a foxhole there just pinned down. And he said, my granddad will never talk about it. He never talked about it till the day he died. I'm sure that was a very traumatic experience. And our men and women in the military go through terrible things. And it traumatizes them, you know, even when they're out of the military. But then, of course, war, rape, torture, those kind of things were categorized as, yes, trauma in the 1980s. But then they began to change things in the early 2000s to let the concept creep down farther to where now it includes anything experienced by an individual as either physical, which is what we've already talked about, or emotionally harmful. And what they did was they shifted to this. In the early 2000s, a subjective standard. Now, there's no question in my mind if someone went through torture, war, rape. Yeah, that's very traumatic. That's you know, legitimate mental trauma, if you want to call it that. And obviously in some physical trauma as well. But then to shift it down even farther and say, well, it really depends on how it felt to you. If you feel that something was unsafe, or you felt that it was abusive for you to hear that, or someone was wearing their Make America Great Again hat, and that is unsafe for me. It's a hat, people. It's a hat. That hat came off that person's head, ran across the floor, and kicked you in the face. Yes, it did. It was so violent, that hat. You need to be protected from that. But that's the way we are. That's where we are today. That was abusive to me. That person, what that person's philosophy is abusive to me, and I don't feel safe. And so we're redefining safety. Pretty soon we're going to be arresting people over offense instead of literal. It's where we are. Where we are. We're switching physical for emotional safety. And here's the last little on this slide. Emotional discomfort equals physical danger. Emotional discomfort equals physical danger. This is where they're coming from. This emotional discomfort that I experienced means I am in danger. I need safety. Just because somebody said something? Just because somebody had a concept that was a little different than yours? And now you're in physical danger of literally dying. Oh, what's going to happen to me? This is where we've redefined things. Now, let's talk about the Brown University example. This is where the safe space originated. Remember that a few years ago? The safe space happened in March 2015, or in that time frame, 2015 time frame. I wanted to give really quick the story of this history of Brown University and the safe space example. It was the first usage of the safe space concept. They had little signs like this, you know, you're safe here. Notice what colors they are. Diverse, inclusive, accepting, welcoming, safe space for everyone. Got to label these, got to post these up. Got to have places for our students to go so that they can feel safe. Was someone running around the campus with a weapon about to shoot them? No. No. What happened? There was an on-campus debate between two feminists, actually. They're both feminists. And they had a debate because they were used to in college. We're going to present two sides. Isn't that what a debate is? Is a debate two sides? Yes, of course it is. If you don't have two sides, might as well have a party or something. Everybody agrees. Woo! All right, let's go drink some soda. You know, I mean, it's a debate. They're going to argue about some things. They're going to disagree on some things. And the students who are, you know, 19, 20, 21 years old should have the brain power to sift through what is being debated and to come to their own conclusion. Why? They should have been taught to think. But because we've prepared the road for them instead of preparing them for the road, they can't think on their own. So they just resort to being offended. And so one feminist disputed the claim. Now, one woman came in and said, America is a rape culture. All they want to do is hurt women, blah, 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 blah. The other woman said, well, okay, there is rape in America. Yes, of course. There's rape all over the world. And she debated that we're not a rape culture. That's a pretty harsh thing to throw on a nation. That's pretty harsh. She said, you know, compared to Middle Eastern nations or other parts of the world where this is a common thing, America is not a rape culture. Is there rape in America and is that terrible? Yes. She wasn't denying that. But just simply because this woman suggested that America wasn't a rape culture. Now, this is a feminist who was against rape and knows that there was rape, but yet because she would not agree fully that it was a culture of rape in America, everybody got upset. And these students became really, really upset. Let me see if I can find the exact... Okay, so any student, the competing... What they did was... I remember now. Okay, so because of the concept creep, they tried, first of all, to get the feminist uninvited. Because they foresaw this woman that before the debate even happened, that woman is not agreeing that America is a rape culture. That's going to cause me to be in emotional danger, which is physical danger. We've got to get her to not come to our college. She cannot be. I tried to get her uninvited. The president wouldn't do that. Many of the students were, again, our word that I hate, triggered. We're triggered. We're going to do something about this. You know, I wish people would get triggered about sin. It really makes me mad. I'm sorry. I'm going to get angry in a minute. Why can't we get triggered about the sin in our lives? Why can't we get triggered about the way this nation hates God? Why can't we get triggered that nobody prays in the schools anymore? Why can't we get triggered about homosexuality being a sin and abomination to God? But no, we get triggered about subjective things that go against my little feelings. So they got all triggered, and the president of the college allowed a competing, so he said, we're going to do the debate. Then after the debate, now this guy, he should have just stuck to his gun and said, you idiots, you can leave the college. That's what I would have done. You know, one thing I noted in all this college mess that we're going to talk about in the next week or two, there's no leadership. No leadership. I'd have kicked them kids out so quick. Get out of here. You don't want to cause all this trouble. We don't need you in here. But of course, again, everybody's been so offended. We don't want to have that. Anyway, the president of the college allowed a competing, now listen, get this, a competing one-sided talk. Now, how's that competing? It's a one-sided talk that condemned America and said America was a rape culture. They had the debate. They had a competing one-sided talk that those students that were triggered could then go to this second talk and be filled in about how really, don't listen to that other feminist, really America is a terrible rape culture and all these white men out there just want to do nothing but rape women. And it's terrible. Well, that's what they did. One-sided talk. It didn't help. Students were still angry. They were still triggered. So the safe space originated right there with the students. So the student worked with the brown students. Now the students did this. And they created a safe space, first time they used it, where anyone who felt triggered and upset could come and recuperate. And they could get help. And they could freely discuss how they really felt. The room, listen to this. You ready? The room was equipped with cookies, coloring books, bubbles, Play-Doh, calming music, pillows, blankets, a video of frolicking puppies, as well as students and staff members purportedly trained to deal with trauma. Are we in K-5? That sounds like a fun K-5 class, Mrs. Brainerd. You have videos of puppies out there. We'll play with some Play-Doh. We'll have a great time. Coloring sheets there, and I still might fail. But that sounds like a wonderful daycare thing, Tara. Y'all try the video. Puppies frolicking, you know? A lot of fun. These are college students that need Play-Doh. I stopped playing with Play-Doh when I was like 7 because it made my hands smell funny. I threw that mess down and ran back outside with a dog. I said, man, I'll roll around in the weeds before I play with that stuff. My mom used to make homemade Play-Doh, by the way. She had a big pot on the stove. Anyway, it's another story, another time. But the threat wasn't just the reactivation of painful personal memories. It was also the threat to students' beliefs. The memories were of what they heard was a threat to their beliefs. One student who sought out the safe space put it this way. I was feeling bombarded by a lot of viewpoints that really go against my dearly and closely held beliefs. Well, welcome to life. You know what? Atheism and agnosticism and all the other isms, they bombard against my personal beliefs. I'm not going to go running and crying in a closet and need a safe space with mommy with a pacifier, with a few of our umpires in there maybe, but I don't know, with the fans. You know, I don't need all that. You know why? Because like the hymn says, I know whom I have believed. And I'm persuaded. But they don't know what they believe. Which is the problem with the religion of humanism. We don't know what we believe. We don't want what God has to offer. We don't like His safe space because it comes with my life changing or, you know, oh, I have some objective thing I have to answer for. Oh, I don't want that. I like my humanism. I like to be God and I like to be in charge. So I'm going to find my own safe space. And this is where this problem originated. So a lot of viewpoints that went against their beliefs. And so now we've got the safe space thing going all over colleges, and they have signs just like this out there. Oh, you're safe here. Welcome. Have a cookie. I have a loss for words. So safe space resulted there. Now, let's continue on. I'm still a little bit behind here. We got to hurry up. Research, however, and we're going to get a lot into this, shows that trauma helps people become stronger. We don't have time to get into all the studies that are here. Avoiding the trigger is a symptom that you have trauma, not a cure. It's a symptom that there's a problem here, but it's not the cure. Don't keep avoiding it. You know, you keep avoiding a problem, what does it do? It gets bigger. It gets bigger. We keep burying it. So safety then became, now get this, is the way they word it, a sacred value. A sacred value. Everyone deserves it, and it is a prize. And again, what's their definition of safety? You know, we all deserve in this country to have some safety. You know, again, we've been to other countries, and well, they've got fences with barbed wire and all kinds of stuff around their houses and gates and compounds and walls and things. Why? Because we want to keep bad people out. And that's what safety is for. But we've changed this. We've changed this where safety is a sacred value. And again, that safety is not talking about physical, what I was describing. It's talking about emotional. Emotional. Your emotional safety is a sacred value. If you're offended, then the person that offended you needs to go to prison. They took away your sacred value. Work to keep kids safe. That's what we've done. We've worked really, really hard to keep them safe. It's like they're on the playground equipment. Grab him, go good. Okay. I got you. Oh, we made it. All right, are you okay? Now, I know kids get hurt on playground equipment. I know that. And we got to be careful and don't do silly things, skipping five bars and jumping like Michael and James out there on the playground when they were kids, probably. I don't know. But, you know, we've helicoptered them to death. So we work to keep them safe, which results in their less resilience and more fragility. And so now they're more fragile, which tells the adults they need more safety. So they put in more safety, which means they become more fragile, and then we put more safety, which makes them more cycle. Worse and worse and worse. And this is where we are today. The untruth of fragility, and I didn't make it anywhere where I thought I would. Let's see here. I made it 4 slides today instead of 5. All right, well, next week we're going to keep going and we're going to go with the untruth of emotional reasoning. And this is an important one. We're not going to spend as much time on the next 2, but keep your hand out, bring that back. The untruth of emotional reasoning and the untruth of the us versus them mentality. We're going to talk about that. And then when I come back, probably in a few weeks or so, we're going to talk about some literal examples that have happened in the last 3 to 5 years on college campuses, things that have happened that are really... I hadn't heard of half of them. The news doesn't really cover some of them, I guess. Really shocking to me. Really shocked me of some things that these students have done. The college disinvites, which, by the way, as of 2015, they have a graph that I'll talk about, shows how many people were upset and protested certain people being invited to colleges. It was just a normal, a few here and there, 2015. Because we've gotten this new generation in college now. Got to have safety. And again, is safety something that we want? Yes. Yes. Safety is of the Lord. We say that a lot. We're going to trust the Lord. We want to be wise. We don't want to be dumb. You know, all right, kids, let's go to the roof. First one down wins. No. Well, you know, we don't want to do things like that. We want to be smart and wise, of course. We don't want our kids, you know, jumping off of a 20-foot ladder or something, breaking their legs. And they'll learn not to jump off a 20-foot ladder, but, you know, we don't want to pay the emergency room bills. Anyway. So you want to be safe and you want to be wise. But don't, I got a boo-boo. They come to me in camp, I got a boo-boo. I'm like, where? You'll be fine. There's this one little boy. It seems like he gets hurt at the drop of a hat. He's always getting plowed in the face in the bounce house or somebody jumped on him and kicked him in the teeth accidentally, and he comes out, and I just walk up to him and I go, "You're all right, buddy." "Yes, sir." I said, "All right, go back and play." "Okay." And it's over. I'm going to teach him to deal with it. Now, obviously, if he's gotten head swollen and blood pouring down his face, it's a different story. You need to get that taken care of, unless you're my little brother Daniel, who just, mom just hoses him off and puts a band-aid on there, and he's back out there playing. You be wise. But we've interpreted it. We've let it creep down to cover me being offended and me being emotionally hurt. Now, let's pray. Father, help us with the opportunities we have with our young people, our families, our children. Be able to teach them your word. To be able to teach them how to be exhorted and reproved. To be able to teach them to handle the chastening of the Lord. And to handle difficulties. That's part of our life. It's difficulties. And I pray, Lord, that we would do it and handle them with the right spirit and the right heart, knowing that they're from You. You guide our steps. And we would trust You, Father, for safety, but yet also be wise as is needed and practical and common sense. But Lord, I pray that You would help us, especially with the things we see on the horizon in the future in this country. Lord, that we would continue to be founded in Your Word until You return or until we're not allowed to speak anymore. And I pray that You would just help us to be faithful to You. In Christ's name, amen. All right, thank you.